As you've traveled your areas of responsibility, have any of you run into a contact staff who manifested some of these characteristics? Fights change, defensive, maybe fat and lazy. You can't read it. Oh, sorry. I won't read the other. Fights change, becomes defensive, fixed and inflexible, no team spirit, personal problems, fat and lazy, won't take a risk, without imagination, disorganized, flies into a rage, passes the buck, and has poor understanding of people. Riding in on the plane Saturday with Fred, he shared a little story with me that has some application to our issue of evaluation. Seems as if there was this oil well fire in Texas, southeast part of Texas. The big oil well was coming in, and as things are wont to occur, they had a problem. And as the well came in, a giant fire erupted. The crew that was assigned to the company rushed on down to the fire and could not get any closer than about 2,000 to 3,000 feet. And they were just flat out panicked. They did not know how to get that fire out. They decided they'd call Red Adair, this guy who's noted for putting out these kind of fires, travels the world putting out oil well fires. He was not available. And the thing is just raging out of control. In the office, we have an executive crisis. All the officers of the company are standing there and they do not know what to do. And off to the side, this little girl who works in the office just calmly picks up the phone and she dials a local fire company. And they're standing there talking, and all of a sudden they hear the noise of the fire bells, and this truck comes racing onto the lot. And they see this fire truck, and it comes down the hill, roars right on by them, roars right on into the blaze, and stops about 20 feet from the rig. All these firefighters leap out of that truck, and they frantically begin hosing one another down and hosing down the fire. And they put it out. And the owner is standing there, and he's just overwhelmed with gratitude. He whips out his checkbook, writes a $50,000 check, and as they come driving back up to the company office, he goes up to the chief and he hands the chief this check, and he expresses his gratitude for putting out the fire. By now, there's a crowd of onlookers standing there, and one of the individuals in the crowd says, "Hey, chief, what are you going to do with that check?" And the chief says, "Well, the first thing I'm going to do is fix the cotton picking brakes on his truck." I wish I could say that we had an objective method by which we arrived at who was going to take these sessions, but we really didn't have one. Other than Bob was in charge of the conference, he made the assignments. I can recall the first time I was asked to evaluate another individual on the Navigator staff and how insufficient I felt, with fear and trembling, inadequate and all the rest. But that still didn't change the assignment, and I still had the job, and I still had to do it. And that began a process of OJT, in a sense, on-the-job training. So what I'm going to share is a result of just things that I've picked up that I do myself, and some things that I've been thinking about doing and haven't done yet, but I'm in the process of putting them into practice. So my outline is going to have three areas: why evaluate, what to evaluate, and how to evaluate. Why evaluate, what to evaluate, how to evaluate. Now, generally, we evaluate to answer a few simple questions. Where are we? I came across this one the other day. Can you read that one? That's oftentimes how we feel, like that poor bird in the desert. You are here. Where are we? Where should we be? How did we get there? And what are we going to do about it? For me, there are three key reasons why I evaluate as a director. Longfellow, in a poem called The Psalm of Life, has a stanza that goes like this. "Tell me not mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream, for the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem." That's one reason why I have to evaluate. Things are not what they seem to be. That is a consistent fact of life. And each of us sees through a glass darkly. Many times, I'm sure, like I have, you've discovered that your initial impression of a situation or a person has been wrong. Maybe just like me, you've had the same experience of jumping to a hasty conclusion based on the wrong information. And then how awful you feel on the inside. And you think, oh, if I'd have only taken a little more time to find out. In Proverbs 18, verses 14 and 17, verse 14 says that if I jump to a hasty conclusion, I may well break the spirit of my brother. The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear? In the context of that wounded spirit is judging without all the information. And then 18:17 says you'll offend your brother. And trying to win him back is a very difficult thing. That being the case, then, we need to really give some serious thought to what is really there so that we do not judge on the basis of appearance. Judge righteous judgment. Secondly, I want to evaluate so as to serve the staff. One of our responsibilities as directors is to serve the men and women in our staff in the execution of their ministry. It's their contact assignment. It's their area of ministry. And I just jotted down Mark 10:45 and Matthew 20:26-27. I think there are two ways in which I can serve my staff in their ministry. One, by holding them responsible for that ministry. This is your ministry. This particular target, this city, this campus, this base. Galatians 6:4 says that they're going to find fulfillment in that ministry themselves. And I need to hold them responsible for it. Make sure he's carrying his share of the load. And then also by holding him accountable for that ministry. When Paul wrote to the church at Colossae, he made mention in the end of the letter, remember, to Archippus. And he said, say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry that you have received in the Lord, that you fulfill it. If you got that ministry from the Lord, and this is what the Lord says he wants you to do, and you've told me that, then you fulfill that. You fill it to the full. Colossians 4:17. And then the third reason for evaluating the staff would be to stimulate them. First, because things are not what they seem. Secondly, to serve them, and then thirdly, to stimulate them. Proverbs 27:17 in the Living. A friendly discussion is as stimulating as the sparks that fly when iron strikes iron. There are four ways in which I think I can stimulate the staff. First, by coaching them. Secondly, by assisting them. Third, by encouraging them. And fourth, by exhorting them. In coaching them, I can be another set of eyes and ears for them. Helping them sort things out. Helping them to see the forest through the trees. Supposedly, and I underline supposedly, we've been that way before and can give them some guidance. It may not be the case sometimes, but oftentimes it is the case. Oftentimes, I would suspect that God has given you and me an awful lot of common sense. And all we have to do is just put it to use. And secondly, I can coach them by observing and critiquing the people in the situations that they're in. Assisting them, I can assist the people by simply being a resource available to them so they can bounce ideas off me. I can also be a resource to preach for them, teach for them, help them recruit someone, help them counsel with someone, but just to assist them in their ministry. Thirdly, encouraging them. Jack preached to us out of Acts 20 the other day, yesterday. And one of the things that I noticed in Acts 20 with respect to the Apostle Paul, it said he went around encouraging his people. And I think there are two ways that we can encourage, by lip and by letter. By lip and by letter. Proverbs was 18:4 in the TEV. A person's words can be a source of wisdom, deep as the ocean, fresh as a flowing spring. The words that come out of your mouth can be a source of wisdom. Deep as the ocean, fresh as a flowing spring for your people. Encourage them with your lip. Give them words of encouragement. A tremendous motivator. That's Proverbs 18:4 in the TEV. And then by letter. The Apostle Paul wrote letters to encourage. Do you take the time to write to your staff a little letter every now and then? or send them a funny little card or some such deal like that, just to encourage them? Could be a tremendous encouragement to them, tremendous ministry to them. Also be a pain in the neck if you overdo it. And then fourth, by exhortation. We can serve our people by being faithful and exhorting them whenever they need it. Proverbs 24:26. In the Living it says, it is an honor for a person to receive a frank reply. Proverbs 24:26. Okay, what to evaluate? I'd like to suggest two general areas, broad areas, the man and the ministry. And with respect to the man, we need to be interested in two areas, his personal life and his family life. Now, I realize all of this is review for most of you, but like Peter said, we need to stir one another up by going over it and over it and over it. The man, his personal life. How is he doing spiritually in the basics? Not taking it for granted. Not taking it for granted that he's doing all right. Not assuming that he's okay. But asking him. How often do you sit down and review verses together? Share quiet time together. Share what God's doing in your life. How's he doing physically? Be concerned for his physical condition, physical fitness, his general health. And then thirdly, how's he doing psychologically? Is he developing his mind? Or is he just going to go to seed and not let him have that supposed luxury of just going to seed? Stir him up. His family life. How's his wife doing? How is she doing physically, spiritually, emotionally? When was the last time when you traveled around and evaluated and spent some time with your staff and you sat down with her wife? Just you and she over a cup of coffee and just had a chat. Or is your ear attuned to that kind of thing? How are the kids doing? Is he ruling well his own house? Are the children in subjection? Or do we get so involved in our evaluation that we're just primarily concerned with the ministry and we're not concerned with what's going on in the family? And I feel we have a responsibility there. What's the home atmosphere like? What's the prevailing spirit around the home? Do you feel comfortable when you're there? Do you feel loved? Is it a happy place? Or is it a pain in the neck? Or is it greatly uncomfortable because you're there? I recall one time watching one of the state directors walk into a NAV home, and as soon as he got in the kitchen door, this is what he did. He walked across over the refrigerator and went like that over the door jamb. The poor wife was standing there. And you think, oh, no one would do something as stupid as that. Oh, yeah. Every now and then we do something dumb, each of us. Fortunately, that wasn't me, but I've probably done something just as bad as that. But how do people feel like when you come around? And then how do you feel when you're there? Are they happy to see you? Well, the people in the home, if there are men and women in the home, how are they doing? How does the wife think they're doing? Ask her how she thinks they're doing. He asked the area guy, says they're doing just great. Just great. Everything's fantastic. And you ask the wife. She's about ready to kill them. Kill every one of them. Or ask them how they think they're doing. Or you might even ask the kids how they think they're doing. All different areas in which we can collect all kinds of information on what that family is like. Well, enough of that. It's too convicting. The ministry, I've listed five things. Presence, plan, process, product, particulars. Presence, plan, process, product, particulars. By the presence, I mean, what is the overall atmosphere or presence that you sense when you're there in his area or her area? What's the overall morale of the area? What is sensed by other navigators when they visit the same area? What sort of feedback do you get from them? What kind of excitement is in the area? And I can think just in our region as I travel around, there are pockets where there are certain spirits that are present. For instance, an overriding emphasis of evangelism in one area. They are excited about evangelism. And over here it's discipling. And over here it's a real spirit of servanthood. And over here there's a tremendous spirit of generosity. What's the prevailing spirit in the various areas as you travel around? Try to be attuned to that. And I realize that'll change as the ministry matures. All right, the ministry plan. What is the man or woman's ministry plan? Do they share it with you? Do you have them share it with you? Is it correct? Is it realistic and obtainable? Can it be accomplished? Do the young men and women on the team know what the plan is, and do they feel a vital part of it? Along with the plan, then, what's his ministry schedule, and is he using it to serve his objective, or is he just a slave to it? All right, the ministry process. And here my concern is with four areas: evangelism, establishing, equipping, and then an extra one I've tossed in called ejecting, in a healthy sense. Yes, evangelism, establishing, equipping, and then ejecting. Evangelism. What's the prevailing attitude toward evangelism in that area? What sort of evangelistic activities or events have they been attempting? What type of results are they getting? And then are you engaging in evangelism with people in the area at various stages of growth? Do you get involved in evangelism with those people? Secondly, establishing. Evaluating the various ministry activities designed to help establish the fruit. What sort of activities do they have for the fruit? Rallies, seminars, Bible studies, etc. And are you getting involved in those? And paying particular attention to the content that's being transmitted to the people. What content is being passed on? Equipping. Engage in periodic training sessions. Participate in a man-to-man session or sessions. Evaluate the progress of the team leaders. And then the last one, ejecting. And by this I mean the flow of the people in the ministry in that area. Is there a flow out? Or is it just a bottleneck where they're all going to hang around? Do you have a graduation mentality in terms of your fruit? I realize that's more applicable to a mature ministry, but I think you can establish the mindset in the ministry early on. Are the people being exposed to leadership from other works? Are they being encouraged to explore avenues of service with other works? Are the people being recruited to further training? Are they being recruited to further training with us? All right, the process, the last one, or the fourth one, is the product. And here my emphasis is on time with people. Spending personal time with the products of the ministry at various stages, with the growing Christians, with the young disciples, with the DMs, and with the staff leadership type. And so there I just suggest, I just get personal interviews when I go around. And various times I'll have the guy schedule me with the young growing Christians, and I'll spend most of my time with growing Christians, and then with the disciples, and then with the DMs, and then with the leadership type. Just to get to know those people and know what's going on in that area. Asking them what's happening and how are they doing, and check them out. And then the particulars. Here my emphasis is on what Fred would graciously refer to as the ash and trash of the ministry. Whatever paperwork we might have. How is he doing PR, newsletters? How is he handling problems in the area? What sort of problems have we been having in the area with the public? What sort of reputation does he have and the ministry have? And to find that out, I have to sample men from other works and people in the area to find out what sort of a testimony our people have. Maybe he has some issues with headquarters, some difficulties with the computer. And maybe as a young contact staff or whatever, he's trying to talk to that computer, it's hard to talk to that thing. So maybe it'd be helpful for him to have a little more horsepower to talk. And so to give him a hand. Maybe he just doesn't know who to call. So I want to get involved to help him there. Part of the particulars would be finances. How is he doing on his income? How is he doing on fundraising? All right, now how to evaluate. I'd like to touch first on some SWIFT guidelines, four of them. And my first one is be swift to hear. Swift to hear. 1 Kings 3:9 in the margin. Solomon, when he asked for a listening heart. 1 Kings 3:9. More than just nodding your head. And we all know that to listen to people is very hard work. And I'm sure you've experienced now as you've traveled around and you're evaluating the works, when you come home, if you've really given yourself to it, you are tired. If you have spent hours and hours and hours with people, talking and counseling and concentrating, you are tired. And it's not the kind of tired that you recover from like that. You know, I can go out and work like a dog in the backyard and get a good night's sleep and feel great the next morning. But I come back from a trip, and I am really tired, and I don't recover quite as fast. It took me a long time to figure out why I was so tired. Well, you just sit there talking. But it's hard work to sit there and listen, to concentrate, and not let your mind wander over here and be all over there, but to be with that person. Let me just share a few proverbs with you. I gave you 18:14, 18:13, don't speak too hastily. 18:2 in the Living says, get the facts. I'll put a ladder on this thing. Proverbs 23:23 in the Living, get the facts at any price and hold tightly to all the good sense you can get. But my point is there, be quick to listen. Secondly, be slow to speak. Proverbs 10:14, a wise man holds his tongue. Only a fool blurts out everything he knows. That only leads to sorrow and trouble. Proverbs 15:23, everyone enjoys giving good advice, and how wonderful it is to be able to say the right thing at the right time. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, and then the third one is slow to wrath. Learn to keep you cool. Have a sense of humor. You may be sitting down talking with a staff man and he's on a kick and all of a sudden he goes off on a tear and he's angry about something. And he begins to make all these wild statements and inside you just start to churn. And you want to blow up and say, look man, you don't have it straight. But rather than blow up, just sit there and listen. And then begin to draw him out. Because as soon as you blow up, he blows up. And then we have two volcanoes erupting there and nothing's going to get done. So be slow to wrath. Keep your cool. And then the fourth one, have a servant heart. 2 Corinthians 8:9. Jesus left heaven to become poor so that you and I could become rich. We need to have the same attitude with respect to our people. A willingness to become poor so that they can become rich. The willingness to knock ourselves out for them rather than just expecting them to knock themselves out for us. Philippians 2:17, the Living, pour your lifeblood out for them. Philippians 2:4, be interested in what they're doing. All right, now, as far as evaluating goes, observing. Seeing. One of the verses I pray for myself with respect to not just the ministry, but the family would be Proverbs 20, verse 12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye and the hearing ear, even the Lord hath made both of them. So I want to ask God, help me to look. Help me to see things. Help me to be observant as I'm in that area. And help me to hear. My desire to be there is to serve. And I want to be able to hear and see things such that I can serve this guy or this gal. So eye and ear looking and listening at what's going on out there. Then the other thing I've got is intuition. Listening to the Spirit of God in your own inner man. Maybe the Spirit of God is saying to you, something isn't quite right here. Maybe you ought to ask this question, ask that question. Observing. And participating. And by here I mean getting involved in the ministry with the people. With the various people in the pipeline. The staff man, the growing Christians, the disciples, the disciple makers, the leadership types. Get involved in the ministry with them. The next one would be interviews. Just dialogue with these people as you're involved with them. And then after that's all done, and you've collected all this information, then to sit down and review it. Get some time alone by yourself. And go back over it. What did I see? What did I hear? How does it all fit together? How does it appear to me? And then you need to sit down with the staff man. And maybe the staff man's wife, but at least with the staff guy, and go over all this information. Sit down with him and his past history, the past history of his ministry. Go over his objectives, how they're doing, the observations you've made, the performance that you've seen since you've been there, and review it all with him. Now, 1 Corinthians says, love looks for a way of being constructive. So my last point is refining. You probably made some observations, and there are some things that you think need to be done. Love looks for a way of being constructive. Then you need to come prepared to that session to offer some constructive suggestions. Don't just say, no, this is the way it is, friend. It's all fouled up, and the next time I come back, it better be squared away, or we are going to have some hard words. That's just not very motivating. So have some specific suggestions to offer to him on how this particular thing or this area can be corrected. Then the last thing on that part, I say, come to an agreement before you conclude that session. Even if it's just to agree to disagree. Now, I'd like to suggest two tools. One would be the use of a performance standard. And it's a very simple tool. It's a very simple method. There are three questions involved in it. Blank sheet of paper and three questions. First question, what are your plans? What are your plans? Now that's what you're going to hold them accountable for. Secondly, how can I help? What do you expect of me? And get it down on paper. Now you know what to expect of him. He knows what to expect of you. You're going to hold him accountable for his plans. And the third thing, ask him the question, what can you do for this team, this ministry, that I have not allowed you to do or enabled you to do? Each of us has this great desire to participate in the overall objective. There's some contribution we want to make. Does my boss know what that contribution is? Maybe you say to him, well, you just can't do that now. Well, fine, but at least he's expressed himself.
What can you do for his ministry that we have not allowed him?
That might be for his or for the overall, say, the regional team. Maybe there's a contribution he thinks he might want to make regionally. At least he needs a chance to get it out and say it. Another way you can do this thing, if any of you have gone through that Ankhan seminar, would be to take the same little tool in dialogue and come to an agreement on that, what his plans are. The second thing I'd like to offer, and that will be a handout I'm going to give you for the discussion group, and that's an evaluation guide, a format. It seems to me that one of the disciplines we need as directors in the work, and some of you may be doing it in some areas, we're not doing it in ours yet, and that is writing down things on our people yearly, where they are. It's not just enough for me to have a relationship with everybody and be able to relate how they're doing. I've got to be able to get that down on paper so that if I die and some other guy gets his job, at least he knows where they've been and how they've been doing for 3 or 4 years. He can pick up a folder and see how they have been progressing, not just on the quantitative stuff, but how he's been doing qualitatively. And we make an observation of the guy at this time when we visit, and the next time when we visit, and the next time we visit, and the man who takes over the next time as his supervisor can read that information and see the process of growth the individual has been having. So one of the things I've worked together is an evaluation guide, and that'll be in each discussion group. And I'd like you to go over that, tear it apart, put it back together again, and see how you like it. And then we'll talk about that this afternoon. Well, that's it. Any questions before I pass out material? Gordy?
Could you use this same evaluating process, the same plan for a regional director as the state director, or is there a difference in the two jobs?
Well, I think with the state director, as he goes around, he would get more detail than I do, specifically, in terms of the process even.
He'd get further down.
Right, he goes further down, involved in it.
But essentially, you're doing the same task.
Right. At least that's what I've been doing, going around. Okay, well, let me just have a word of prayer then. If I could have the discussion group leaders up here, and I'll give them a hand. I've got two. One, the evaluation guide, and then some questions to discuss in your group. Let's pray. Father, thank you again for this session this morning, and we pray that you'd continue to instruct us through the discussion group. Allow us to use these thoughts, Lord, to stir one another up to love and good works. We do desire, Lord, to enhance our capacities to minister and serve our people, and we ask that you'd give each of us creative thoughts for the remainder of the day. In Christ's name, amen.